If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
My two guests this hour, you are going to love. If you are listening from the UK or the United States, if you have never heard of the likes of Prue McSween or Barnaby Joyce, you are in for some colourful radio. So don't go anywhere. Now, you'd think at a time when the cost of living is killing people, power prices have tripled, and the price of groceries is just out of control at the moment, you'd think that the Australian government of the day might be focused on such things. But no, for 3 days in a row, that parliament, both houses, has been dedicated to the mechanics required to create a referendum on the Indigenous voice to parliament, a change to the constitution which gives them their own mini parliament. Now, if Australians had to list their main priorities in life at the moment, you know where an Indigenous voice would be? Off the page at number 720. And if an Indigenous group, or even any Indigenous Australian group, had to list their main priorities in life, you know where an Indigenous voice would be? At the bottom of the page. Anyhow, a deal has been struck this morning between the Coalition and Labor over the updated rules for the referendum. So after literally months of negotiations, including several late nights this week, a deal of sorts has been struck between the federal government and the opposition over what's called the Referendum Machinery Bill, which I'm told modernises the voting system. Now, without confusing you, and it does get confusing, the Coalition had backed most of the bill, which according to The Telegraph included measures to stop foreign interference and have transparency around campaign donations. But the opposition leader, Peter Dutton, had raised three key concerns about Labor's referendum proposal. Initially, the government had sought to dump the traditional pamphlet mail to every Australian outlining the yes or no cases. But later, Labor conceded early to Coalition demands to reinstate it, so we will get a pamphlet. The other two sticking points were a request to delegate formal campaigns and give those groups equal public funding. Now, there's a lot of detail there and so much time spent on detail at the moment, and this is what drives me nuts over the voice concept. We should be focusing on other more important things. Now, in other reports today on the same subject, I noticed that the Prime Minister has privately received the final referendum question formulated by the referendum working group. They couldn't deliver the question last week when they said they would, but they finally have. They couldn't agree then. They have now. Anyway, the question will be publicly unveiled during this sitting fortnight. Now, I've been following National Senator Jacinta Namphigipa-Price closely on this issue, and she has nailed it. She nailed it today when she said Anthony Albanese cannot expect First Nations people to vote yes to the question. And this is after Senator Namphigipa-Price and Warren Mundine, both leaders of official no campaigns, spoke extensively this morning in Parliament House to Indigenous community representatives. And here's the point, the key point. They said Aboriginal people did not want to be divided or segregated, as they say the voice threatened to do. This is why the referendum will fail. Even those designed to receive support from such a voice don't see it as anything but another piece of pathetic and ineffective symbolism. The senator said, "We stand as one under flag as Australians, whether we are from the first peoples of this country, whether it's from those who came on the first fleet and the settlers and the migrants that come to this country. We are one Australia," she said. You see, all this voice does to me is add another level of bureaucracy, another agency, another committee to the many, many layers of bureaucracy that are in place today. What good have they been? What have those layers of bureaucracy done for crime, sexual assault, addiction and violence in Indigenous communities in Australia? Sweet bugger all. All those agencies need to take responsibility for what has failed to close the gap of poverty, the gap of mortality and the gap in education. If these many Indigenous communities have proved to be a failure, and they have, why create a whole new one? Why spend hundreds of millions of dollars on a useless referendum to repeat that error? We've actually done really well in Australia to stop segregation and to stop division between black and white. We are bridging the divide, and yet we find ourselves being pushed by the government of the today to vote on a divided parliament. How is that in keeping with a single Australian identity made up of many ethnic parts? It's a stupid idea which will fall flat on its face. I talk about this with friends in the United States and the UK, and they can't believe the concept. They can't believe that the government is going down this path. They are completely perplexed. And someone should put to the PM today, if the referendum falls, will you resign? Because this is his baby. And you can't ask the country to be part of a mammoth referendum and not take responsibility for its success or failure. At Parliament House today, Aboriginal social worker Melissa Carney had a chance to address the media. She said, the existing representative bodies that were supposed to be representing Indigenous people were ignoring them. She said, why aren't our politicians going out to the remote communities? And how's this from Melissa? She said, we're all Australians here. We're meant to be working together, not against each other. A truer word has never been spoken on this subject. It is a dud issue. It's a dud concept, a dud referendum, and the result will be a dud for Anthony Albanese. This is TNT Radio.
Breaking down the headlines.
It's the news I trust.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
All right, it is time to extract the truth from some of the biggest issues making headlines around the globe today. And if you want to have your say, be part of the conversation on The Voice, go right ahead. Here are the numbers from the Australian New Zealand end of the world, 1-800-670-310. Call in. Have your say on The Voice. Do it now. Don't leave it until after it's done. 1-800-670-310 from the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or from the US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. Now, each and every Wednesday, we turn to the PR queen who loves nothing more than offending the lefties and the low lives of our world. Prue McSween, welcome to the airwaves once again.
Thanks, Smithy. Great to be here.
I want to talk about the legal advice now being proffered by lawyers across the US today over Prince Harry's admission that his drug confessions may see him lose his visa to live in California. He may actually be deported. Now, he was all guns blazing when he was earning a mozza from his tell-all book, Prue, but it might come back to burn him and his family.
Well, it certainly sounds like it, Smithy. You remember when he was promoting the book, he claimed that the drug taking was the cleaning of the windscreen, the removal of life's filters. Well, I reckon it sounded like he was cleaning the whole damn car with the amount he was taking. And it's really come to bite him on the backside. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, this was supposed to be, I think, an exercise in being a role model. But when he's admitted to taking these drugs recreationally, he's really just telling the world what a loser he is and how lost he was. Yeah. You know, when I was a little girl, I grew up and I read fairy tales. You know, there was always the Prince Charming, you know, and I fantasized that, you know, he was going to be taking me away somewhere. Well, what's happened with this prince's fairy tale is he's ended up with the Wicked Witch of America and UK. And UK. It's not a happy
ending,
is it, mate? I know it will, but, you know, frankly, this has absolutely bitten him on the backside. I don't know that he's going to be spared from deportation, but, you know, he said it was his truth-telling, but really his truth or the truth, well, we'll never know, will we? But, you know, he's an entitled millennial. That's what he is, a Peter Pan. And sadly, he's been aided and abetted by Maestro Megan, who's, you know, dynamite. She's really shocking for him. But, you know, what I think's really happened is that, you know, we always, I don't know, I must have been a weird kid when I was growing up, you know, with the Prince stuff and everything. But I always wondered if the royal family ever went to the toilet, because you know, they were just so removed from the rest of us, you know, and I actually found it quite weirdly fascinating that Charles had a passing fascination with tampons. But, you know, you really didn't get to know the royal family. You didn't really understand them until they decided that they were going to go to social media. And that made them one of us now. And so when we see their dirty laundry being aired, we realise that really their used undies are maybe the same smelly old things that ours are. And we're not prepared to forgive them anymore. So I think
and
he's
that's
made
why
one big...
when he wrote in the book, and this is why when he wrote in the book about those, you know, overly personal accounts of conversations with his father and brother, this is what upset us most. Because, okay, it's one thing to talk about your drug use and your sexual endeavours and all that sort of stuff, but to break that cone of silence between, you know, yourself and your brother and yourself and your father, when it's never happened before that I can remember in royal history, you know, what did he expect would happen? Did he think this through? No wonder he's not in the coronation procession, or, you know, he can't get a place on the balcony at Buck Palace.
Well, that's right. But how would he even have dared to show his face, the chutzpah he's got, to even want to go? I mean, who in the royal family would want to even say hello to him in case he started storing it up for a book later? I mean, the guy is just dynamite. You just enter at your own risk. So, you know, I'd be putting him right up the back near the toilets if I was allocating the seating. If he does have the hide to show his face, it'd be fascinating to see.
Yeah, it will be fascinating to see. Now, to issues down under, and I've just pointed out what I think of The Voice, and I'm really encouraged by the Aboriginal people who turned up and converged in Canberra today to have their say. But this is hugely divisive, you know, this Indigenous voice to the parliament. The government is desperate to get the opposition on some kind of unity ticket in support, firstly, of the mechanics, which they've done, but no doubt Dutton will be under pressure to continue that through. I don't think he'll come to the party, and I don't think people in his party, the supporters of the Liberal Party, want him to.
No, exactly. I mean, there's never been a successful referendum here without bipartisanship. But, you know, I just think Dutton's playing a long game by going along with it at this stage. There's nothing to lose. It was, as you say, just mechanics. It was tidying it up, doing some housekeeping. But when it comes to the actual voice referendum, you know, I just can't see him doing it. You know, he'll get kickback from the hand-wringers in his party, of course, and you know, the well-meaning members of the community who haven't really engaged with the detail and don't realise that this is state-sanctioned racism. It's going to make some Australians more equal than others.
Yes.
And, you know, the problem is that if Yes gets up, we're going to be tied up in legal action. It's going to prevent the elected government of the day from pushing any policy through because it's got to have a tick of approval from 3% of the population. And let's remember that this 3% of the population is not really them that's going to be the voice. It's going to be the Indigenous elite industry.
True.
That's been on the gravy train and they don't want that gravy train to stop. So, you know, we'd all be absolute mugs. Nobody, let's face it, would worry about enshrining or recognising the Indigenous Australians, the First Nations people, in our constitution. But we cannot afford to be coerced, you know, blackmailed emotionally by Albanese and others into thinking that if we don't do it, we're bad people. You know, he's gaslighting us.
He is.
It's really, really wrong. And we've just
it's
got to make sure that we... It really is. It's going to be so bad for this country. This country's in enough trouble without us having to be virtually constipated that we can't make any decisions because we've got this group of people dictating to us how we need to live our lives and giving us the big tick or not.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's not going to pass, but people have to get up and have their opinion and say what they believe on the referendum right away. I want to take a quick break and I'll come back with you, Prue. We'll talk about productivity and the direction that Australia might be headed, but also this election on Saturday in New South Wales. Is the government goners? Well, we'll find out. We'll see what Prue thinks of all of that, and we'll come back and take your calls too from Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310, from the UK, 033-0024-1026, or the US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
If you want to get educated, you come here. You don't go to university. That will turn your brain into mush. How do I know that? Because I went for 3 years, and trust me, when I came out, my brain was mush, and it's still mush. So if I were you people, and you have kids, don't push them down the educational route. Tell them to learn to trade. Tell them to learn to plaster, to paint and decorate, to garden, to do something productive with their hands. Don't rack up student debt, because the world is going to hell in a handcart, and all they'll be done is saddled with tens of thousands of pounds of debt in a crashing economy, lack of jobs, mass unemployment, and they will not thank you for that one little jot. That's my theory for the future, because if you're relying on the man to pay your wages, and I don't mean a male, I'm talking about the man in inverted commas, or the woman for any of you feminists out there that are getting offended. The person, let's call it that, they, them, he, she, it, ze, zim, ping, quasi, quarteng, whatever pronouns you want to use. Be self-sufficient, people. Be self-sufficient. That is the message of the hour.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Public school is the instituted agency of socialism throughout every community.
The U.S. government has no authority to have any role in education.
We're going to lose our very republic if we don't stop this indoctrination of children in government schools.
What happened to us in China can happen here.
Have one kind of education and then call it equity.
It's about outcomes. It's about trying to force us all to be equal.
I think we're going to have a race civil war in our hands.
We are exposing kids to pornography as early as kindergarten. Parents just don't know.
No, not anymore. Not anymore. Parents need to wake up. They don't have the interests of your child at heart.
Truth and Lies in American Education at SalemNow.com.
You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
And we'll be joined by Prue McSween talking about issues, in particular down under. Paul Kelly has written in the Australian newspaper today about productivity, Prue. He emphasises the need for Australia to increase productivity, but he says the Labor government has no path or plan to deliver it. And then you've got the over-influential Greens calling for a four-day week, but of course we've got to pay people for the 5 days or the 1 day that they don't work. Excuse my honesty, but Australia is stuffed, Prue.
Absolutely, mate. And it's interesting, and apologies to Barnaby Joyce, who's coming on, and I do like Barnaby, but, you know, we have a bunch of myopic, inept, self-serving politicians who haven't got the guts to stand up and say what we're doing is wrong. You know, we were considered the lucky country. Now I can think we're the dumb country. Yep. We blew it because of these inept people. You know, when you look at what we are doing to this country, we've got an energy policy that's economic suicide. It's killing off business already, and business development and investment. There's stymieing productivity. It's going to relegate us all to, well, a diminished lifestyle, which is the least of our worries. We won't be able to afford to put the lights on in this country.
Nope.
We've got housing unaffordability, where people have to drive for 3 hours just to get to their workplace. We pay people in this country not to work. Thousands of bludgers on generational welfare paid to sit in front of the television, despite the fact that post-COVID, small businesses and others can't find any workers.
Yep.
Then we capitulate all the time to outrageous union demands. Enterprise pattern bargaining, allowing these bloody unionists, these socialists, to tell employers what they may pay their staff, even though their staff aren't even members of a union. Mm. And then we have a country where if you're brave enough to be an entrepreneur, if you're someone like me who said, I'm going to put my house into mortgage, I'm going to start a business. You get done over. You're penalized in tax, red tape. You can't even, you know, we don't celebrate people with who, you know, want to have a business risk, who want to contribute to this country. We think that they're cash cows for Labor governments to use as a bank, and it's happening now. If you're old, outrageous to employ older people. We don't want their experience. They can go to buggery. If you're a business owner, you drown in red and green tape. You're penalised. You know, I was paying payroll tax for the pleasure of giving people a job. How insane is that? Yeah. This is why we're a basket case.
Yep, yep. Mm. A total disincentive. Total disincentive. It's just awful.
Yeah.
One last one before we let you go. We've got a New South Wales election on this weekend. The driver of green policy in the Liberal Party, which has pushed the party so much towards Labor that we can't recognise them anymore, Matt Keane, I hear that because of the influence of One Nation, which is Mark Latham's party, and other minor parties, he might see a swing against him in the seat of Hornsby on Saturday by 16%.
Hey, Smithy, you're a betting man. You know it's going to happen. I just wish we could put some money on it. And this bloke who's called the Trojan horse because he's not liberal, he's not a conservative. He calls himself a progressive to what? He's a greeny lefty who found himself in the wrong party, and he's leading a pack through his Trojan horse of progressive mules to electoral oblivion. I reckon the Liberal Party is going to be done over so badly, and it deserves to be. But then again, Labor doesn't deserve to be in. We hear now that the Teals, these crappy women who wouldn't have a clue, and One Nation, thank goodness, are going to take a lot of the Liberal vote. But, you know, what it's really telling us is that the major parties are crap. They're dumping shitty policies on us. They're scraping the toilet bowl for candidates to vote for, and we are left wondering what the hell to do. So we're putting in a protest vote. God help this country, this state. It's going to be, you know, a really, really diabolical period of time, because we've got economic policy that's going to kill us, and we've got sycophants, compliant, meek, factional people who are just going to say, yes, whatever you say, sir, because they haven't got the nous and capability to stand up and say, hang on a minute, what we're doing is wrong. It's a tragic state of affairs.
Summed up superbly, superbly. I thank you for all of that. You get back to what you really do, and thank you very much for your contribution today. Thank you, Prue McSween.
Thanks, Smithy. Bye, everyone.
Good on you. There you go. She's right. It's sad. It's negative. It's down. It's true. And we need people with courage to get into government to change it. Now, I want to just read a couple of emails, if I may. Alan has written in, and he says the shows are going well. Thank you, Alan. He says, Richard, your caller before on the SAS soldier, nailed the plight of this soldier. What the hell is he doing in jail? Apparently, he didn't apply for bail, says Alan. Well, who gave him that advice? The latter part only is correct, writes Alan, and who knows why, but surely some kind of assessment centre or mental health facility needs to be a better fit for this man. He is charged with murder, true, but he was engaged in SAS work for us, and we should be picking up that tab. Look at the list of grub politicians whose legal defence we funded. It's a very good point, and an excellent point raised by Richard a little earlier in the program. And some other emails coming in, including one from Tony. Tony says, Chris, if you can get Prue to say woke wanker, I know it'll be a good discussion. Loving the show and all your guests. Thank you very much for your humour, Tony. She loves her little slogans for these low lives, and I appreciate that of her. If you'd like to jump on the talkback lines, please do. I'd love to have a chat about some of the subjects we're raising today. The California Assembly's Public Safety Committee has approved a bill that would ban the use of police canines for arrests, apprehensions, and crowd control, which would be a first in the United States. The authors of the bill cited the need for the removal of canines due to racial bias and violence against Black Americans and people of color. Apparently, that's all that canines do. They act out the racist intentions of white police. This is the fantasy ideals of the deluded. Assembly Bill 742 seeks to ban the use of police canines for arrest, apprehension, or any form of crowd control. Won't that be fantastic? The legislation would not prevent the use of police canines for search and rescue, explosive detection, and narcotic searches. The bill, introduced by Assemblyman Corey Jackson, Dee Perris, and Ash Calra, is designed to end a deeply racialized, traumatic, and harmful practice by prohibiting the use of police canines. Well, hang on a minute. It can be traumatic for people with white skin too. Apparently, these people have put out a statement saying the use of police canines has been a mainstay in this country's dehumanizing, cruel, and violent abuse of Black Americans and people of color for centuries. First used by slave catchers, police canines are a violent carryover from America's dark past. Give me a break. They are effective in controlling crowds, whether they be black, brown, blue, white, or brindle. It's just awful. Just this sort of stuff is just, you know, victimhood. This is what carries the United States in completely the wrong direction, going down the idea that Black people are perennial victims and that, you know, methods of police work like canines are only designed for Black people, as if that's the truth. What a load of rubbish. What a load of rubbish. I've got to take a break and get some news for you. If you missed your favorite TNT radio show or interview, simply listen back when you want, wherever you want. Just visit episodes on the TNT Radio website. We're also on all the major podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, Podbean, iHeart, and TuneIn. And there is no reason to miss out on anything. Coming up in the program, Barnaby Joyce. This is TNT Radio.
Big news, 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 news.
A story which contains more than first meets the ear.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. India has bolstered its exports of rice to Africa as it moves to help the continent cope with crippling food shortages. Disgraced former British Prime Minister Boris Johnson has admitted he misled Parliament over the infamous Partygate scandal. And Russian President Vladimir Putin and Chinese leader Xi Jinping signed more than a dozen agreements, ranging from trade and industry to science and the military, at Tuesday's bilateral meeting in Moscow.
Free speech is in our DNA.
Experimental vaccines will never change that.
Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Yeah, even there. Never miss out on the news and views of the big issues of the day. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio.
Or download the TNT Radio app for free.
From the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Thank you so much for your emails. Appreciate those. I'll get to a couple more. And if you'd like to call and voice your disapproval or approval of various aspects of subjects we tackled today, like the voice, etc., like productivity in your country, give us a call if you're in Australia and New Zealand. 1-800-670-310, the UK, 033-00241026. Or the US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. Well, a plan to build a massive $1 billion wind farm near the small township of Walker on the northern New South Wales Tablelands is causing division in the community, as you could imagine, and as has been the case in continents worldwide. Some say it'll provide a reliable stream of income, insulated from drought and flood, while others believe the turbines would spoil prime productive land. Now, under the state government's energy plan for such zones, renewable energy projects will be supported and linked to the grid to replace aging coal plants as they're decommissioned. Now, remember the cost of relaying transmission lines to make sure your renewables are able to take power onto the grid. To do this nationally, they're estimated it will cost $70 billion. So just remember this when you hear a politician say this is cheap renewable power. Vestas, the Danish renewable energy company, which is developing what's called the Winterbourne wind farm, is offering the people of Walker bribes. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. The people of Walker a staggering amount of money. About 55 landholders stand to earn about $30,000 per turbine hosted on their land per year. That's not a bribe, is it? Some could have up to 10 turbines. That's $300,000 per year. The local council stands to benefit as well. Vestas is offering to pay $1 million up front and $750,000 a year indexed to the CPI for the life of the project. Federal Nationals MP Barnaby Joyce is a critic of this project. He's recently called it nothing but a pack of poo ticket. The member for New England joins me live. Barnaby Joyce, welcome to TNT Radio.
Good afternoon from Australia and good morning from the United States and good something everywhere else that you're being listened to, Chris.
Good something. Listen, if they are a packet of poo ticket, they're the largest poo tickets I've ever seen. These are monster structures. And I hope, Barnaby, that these very wealthy landholders who are taking the taking the money have it on a contract somewhere that in 20 years when they've got to remove these monster turbines, that it's someone else's responsibility and not the farmer.
Well, the first thing I'd say is they're not wind farms, they're wind factories. There's nothing farming about a huge structure in your place. And to give you an idea, this is like around a town in Oklahoma or a town in Tennessee, a small town, 2,000 people. They will have more structures over 260 metres high than in the Sydney CBD of Australia. Now, that is an absurdity. That is an absurdity. What we are also seeing, of course, is that the whole nature of the power, it's intermittent and it's terribly expensive because of the time you take something that is 5-minute power, 10-minute power to 24/7 power, so you can reliably keep your fridge on all day or reliably run a factory, then you have to, of course, buy the backup, which is pump hydro or batteries, and the cost of them is through the roof. I will give your listeners one example of this. In Australia, in their infinite wisdom, they're about to blow up a power station. I'll repeat that, not figuratively, literally, blow up Liddell in the Hunter Valley. Now, it's an older power station, no doubt about that, but rather than refurbishing it and keeping the 1,300 megawatts, and how many does that supply? Well, times it by 1,000. So the power station that supplies 130,000 people, rather than keep it, they're going to blow it up and replace it at some stage with wind factories. Now, to try and justify this, they're building this thing called Snowy Hydro 2.0, which is a big pump hydro in a national park south of Canberra, the Kosciuszko National Park. Initially, Chris, when we heard about this, I never really supported it. It was the former Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull's idea. It was, they said, $2 to $4 billion. And we said, that was an awful lot of money. Then $2 to $4 billion turned into $6 billion because of geotech work. Then it turned into $8 billion because of environmental issues. Then it turned into $10 billion because it was running behind time and they had issues with the dirt they were cutting out. Then they got one of the boring machines, which is conveniently and quite pleasantly named Florence. This boring machine, Florence, bogged. It's bogged now underground, 70 metres underground, somewhere in the Kosciuszko National Park. And now the costing is coming back between $10 and $20 billion, between $10,000 million and $20,000 million. Now, with $20,000 million, we could have refurbished every coal-fired power plant in Australia to high-intensity, low-emission coal-fired power and flood the market with power and bring down power bills. But no, and we still have people who prance around the dispatch box in Parliament telling us renewables are the cheapest form of power, when I can assure you that people in 3-bedroom brick houses with iron roofs, with no air conditioner, no pool, and their power bill here for the quarter, $1,500. Now, that is an awful lot of money for people who are doing it tough. And This is the sort of insanity that we've got. So, yes, there are people who are going to make money because they've got these wind factories on their place. But there's a sting in the tail because the people who are responsible for decommissioning these things, because they become obsolete, they're just technology and they become obsolete like everything else, most likely obsolete through things such as small modular reactors, which will inevitably come in, that, well, the responsibility belongs to the farmer. Now, they cost about $250,000 to put up each one. They cost about $750,000 to pull down. So you're getting your $30,000 a year. Let's say you get it for 10 years. That's $300,000. Let's say you got it for 20 years. And that's ridiculous to think that that technology will be relevant in 5-10 years rather than 20 years. Well, you're still below the cost. And that's, and what the cost will be then, God only knows. But when they become an occupational health and safety asset and start rusting and catching on fire, as they do, then we'll come around to the farmers and say, well, they're your fixture, mate. You got to pull them down.
Yeah. These farmers are obviously got their hands out. They want a quick fix, but they don't realise what they've bought themselves. And look, the problem with the likes of you who are, you know, who have joined the band to try and campaign against these wind farms is the fact that you're fighting against a very influential character by the name of Matt Keane, the Treasurer of New South Wales, whose policies on climate and energy are just full steam ahead for renewables. And well, have you seen the reliable document from Matt Keane? I haven't, that shows that renewables can track one day, Barnaby.
Well, and the Australian people are not stupid. They're about to go to an election in New South Wales, and even in his own seat, Matt Keane's primary polling has gone down by 16%. Yeah. Even in left-wing seats, he's a net negative. Yeah. See, they fascinate themselves in the boarding school, which is Parliament House, and they don't realise that other people are calling BS on what they say because their power bill is the ultimate truth. And as the ultimate truth of their power bill, they're realising that, you know, what they say is not the reality.
Now, I ride my motorcycle to Wagga.
I can hear a bell ringing. I'm just going
to. Does that mean you've got to go into Parliament?
Give me 10 seconds. Keep talking.
Okay. I'll keep talking. I was going to talk to Barnaby about my little trips to Walker, and I know the people of Walker. I know them to be down to earth. I know them to be sensible. And I just wonder how they're coping with this incredible wind farm taking over the rural part of their district. I don't think that they will cop it.
Now,
I was good. So Walker, I know the people of Walker. I ride my motorcycle there with my mates on occasions. I cannot believe the good people of Walker, with their common sense, their real grasp of Australia, would cop this wind farm. What is the feeling in Walker about the wind farms or the wind factories?
The vast majority can't stand the idea that we're going to be turned into an industrial park, an industrial park that provides very inefficient and very expensive power to a nation which is dealing with other circumstances where we have to come as strong as possible, as quickly as possible, because China's breathing down our neck. Now, we won't have a manufacturing industry if we don't have reliable power. We won't have the capacity to do many things unless you have reliable power. And we've already had blackouts in Sydney during the heat wave because of the inability of the power grid to sustain power to the whole of the city of Sydney. So, you know, it is insane. Look, we've got China building new coal-fired power stations and nuclear power stations. We've got America refurbishing nuclear power. We've got Europe built. Even Greta Dam Thunberg supports nuclear power. But in Australia, we have this crazy situation. And listen to this. So in Australia, they believe in digging up uranium. No problems there. They believe in semi-processing it. No problems there. They believe in taking it through the middle of town to put on a ship. But they believe it's immoral to use themselves. However, it gains morality as it passes over salt water to go to Japan or to Korea or to other parts of the world. Now we're talking about, because we're bringing small modular reactors in nuclear submarines, that we have to take the rubbish back and bury it back in Australia. So we dig it up, semi-process it, take it through towns, sell it to other people and take back the rubbish, but we don't believe in using it. Now, you explain that. And now we have nuclear submarines we're paying a lot of money for to develop and to buy and to build. They have small modular reactors actually with highly enriched uranium in it. In fact, highly enriched uranium in many instances have come from the decommissioning of nuclear weapons. So highly enriched uranium. What on earth do we do when these nuclear submarines come into the port of Sydney or Brisbane or Perth or Melbourne or, I don't know, Wollongong, and they've got their lights on and it lights up the dock? Do we run out and say, you can't do that? It's illegal. You must turn off those lights because otherwise we have nuclear power in Australia and that would be devastating. What happens if they run an extension cord off the sub because they need, I don't know, sand down something on the dock? Is that illegal? Do they get arrested? It's bonkers mad.
Bonkers mad, all right, squared. It's just unbelievable. And I was interested to hear you say about 5 minutes ago, you said, and it will happen. You were referring to small modular reactors. Oh, it won't happen under this government or under this prime minister, but you're convinced it will happen. That makes me feel better.
When we have micro-reactors, the micro-reactors, listeners, are up to 20 megawatts, so 20,000 people. They're the size of about two coffee tables. And I was referring to a person called Professor Mark Ho, who's also part of the development of them. So you've got something the size of two coffee tables that supplies power for 20,000 people. You know where you're going to find those? On Pacific Islands, in Vanuatu and Fiji and parts of Papua New Guinea. And so you'll be going around everywhere if you're an Australian with areas that have small modular reactors and micro reactors, but you won't have them yourselves. Now, ultimately, it's like trying to ban a mobile phone or ban a fridge or ban a flat screen TV. It's a wonderful idea at the start. It's just patently absurd. So these things will come in. And when they do come in, we'll have the pleasure of knowing that they're helping the micro reactor industry or the small modular reactor industry of England or France, of the United States, of China, of Canada, of Argentina, of Scandinavian countries, Czechoslovakia. We'll be buying it from them, as we always seem to do, because apparently we were so clever that we decided that we'd never develop them ourselves.
Just mad. Bonkers is the word of the day. You're exactly right. Barnaby Joyce, it's fabulous to have you on TNT Radio because our listeners appreciate the truth. They appreciate politicians who have the courage to tell us the truth about projects like Green Power and understand, the liabilities associated with projects like these, not just the positives. There are liabilities, and in this case, there is more liabilities than there are positives. Fantastic to have you on the program. Thank you very much for your time.
Absolute pleasure.
Good on you, mate. Federal Nationals MP Barnaby Joyce, you heard what he said. If only we had politicians who were as gutsy as Barnaby to say, hang on, while you're doing this, I understand why you're doing it, but have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? Have you thought about this? But when you become an evangelist, like Climate Change Minister Chris Bowen or Anthony Albanese, you become an evangelist, so you push the religion really hard and you don't tell the congregation about the negatives associated with that religion. You don't tell them, how I said that they were the cheapest power? We've got to lay all new transmission lines to the value of $70 billion to get your cheap power. And it goes on and on. They don't tell you that. Because as evangelists, you don't tell them the negatives. It's just appalling. And the day will come when this country, Australia, falls off the cliff over this so-called transition to a renewable future. It's all rubbish, rubbish through and through. Must take a break. Now, why not give TNT Radio a follow? We are on all the major social platforms. Yes, we are. In Twitter, Instagram, Gab and Getter. Help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's News Talk TNT Radio.
Climate change breaks out. Women and children, the primary victims. News at 11.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
Former U.S. presidential candidate Hillary Clinton has said that women are the primary victims of climate change.
Women and children are the primary victims of conflict and of climate change, and there is no place that unfortunately, tragically shows us that more dramatically than Ukraine today, but there are a lot of other conflicts.
So if you don't support the Green New Deal or the UN Paris Agreement, you are harming women and children. Back in 2005, nearly 20 years ago, I attended the Montreal UN Global Warming Summit and interviewed someone who claimed we needed climate gender justice. The next time you think of climate change, just remember, men warm the globe, women feel the heat. Or put another way, men hate the planet and the women who love them. This has been the Morano Minute on TNT Radio. Thanks for listening.
Interview conducted at 10:15, present are Sergeant Jones, PC Clough, Mr. Wall, an uninsulated cavity wall, and his solicitor, Mr. Bent. Do you understand the charges?
I shall be speaking for Mr. Wall on account of him being a pile of bricks.
Right, you're accused of wasting energy, Mr. Wall, and we've got concrete evidence. We know that unfilled cavity walls are responsible for up to a third of all home energy wastage.
We also believe you're involved in a fencing operation.
We're going to throw the book at you.
Okay. Mr. Wall would like to say ouch.
It's criminal to waste energy. To find out how to save up to 25% off your heating bills, visit saveenergy.co.uk or call 0845 727 7200.
Where the story goes, we follow. Chris Smith on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Interesting to see some of the reaction online to what we've discussed in the last 12 to 15 minutes. People understand that it's a con, that you build wind farms or factories, as Barnaby likes to call them, and you build solar panels in the open spaces. But you've got to get that special power onto the grid. And if it costs $70 billion, it's lousy value. It's inefficient value. We're not stupid. So do not let a politician ever say to you, cheap renewables. Because not only are they not cheap, they're very expensive. Not only that, they are intermittent, so they're not reliable. They're insecure. And if you ask people in Denmark how much they can get out of renewables as part of a proportion of their total power, it's still 12% after 2.5 decades of trying. Just extraordinary. One little message here from Dave. Mate, you and Prue are awesome together. Give her my regards, please. Dave, she listens intently to this program and TNT Radio, so she'll hear that. But how's this? Schneider Electric. Have you heard of Schneider Electric? They're a global specialist in energy management, and they operate in about 100 countries. 100 countries, yes. Australian companies, this is a Schneider Electric press release that I picked up this morning. Australian companies must accelerate their decarbonisation pace tenfold to meet our targets for emission reductions. We've got to increase what we do tenfold, according to Gareth O'Reilly, Pacific Zone President of Schneider Electric. Addressing Schneider Electric's annual summit in Sydney last week, Mr. O'Reilly welcomed the federal government and businesses embracing net zero goals, while stating a fundamental rethink of industrial processes, construction, energy efficiency, and energy generation. In other words, stop what you're doing productively and just do it unproductively using other forms of power. That's what he's saying. So we can reach net zero. We won't be reaching net zero without nuclear power in Australia. He says the climate challenge is really an energy challenge. 80% of global carbon emissions come from the production and consumption of energy. The debate over decarbonisation has shifted fundamentally in Australia over the past year. It's no longer about if we reduce emissions. It's about how to achieve net zero and how quickly. He says we are seeing good progress, but we need to accelerate by almost 10 times. Is he mad? He must be mad. The first step must be reforming and reframing how we use electricity and how we create it. Renewables should replace fossil fuels, he says. Really? How is that done? Go and talk to Denmark, Mr. O'Reilly. Maybe you can go to the country on a special trip. Stay there for a week and have a talk to the people of Denmark and to work out whether they were able to replace their baseload power, which they get hydro from and other forms of power, because renewables can't cut it. They just can't cut it. He says Australia's relatively poor performance in cutting emissions to date means there are significant opportunities for action now. Although attention is focused on replacing fossil fuels with clean energy sources, it is only half the solution. He says the other half comes from tackling the demand side, electrifying processes such as transport and heating. Well, hang on a sec. If we all jump into cars, electric cars, if we all decide to heat electrically, not using gas, because gas is the enemy as well, if we all decide to do that, where's the extra power coming from? Where's the additional baseload power coming from? We're shutting down coal-fired power stations. So are you trying to tell me, Mr. O'Reilly, that renewables are not only going to replace baseload power, which hasn't happened anywhere in the world, but they're actually going to treble our baseload power to cater for everything that we electrify. All I say to that is pigs fly as well. If you'd like to call in, you've got time. From Australia and New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. From the UK, 033-0024-1026. Or the US and Canada, 1-888-201-6425. I've got Alex on the line from Canberra. Hi, Alex. Go right ahead.
G'day, Chris. Yeah, we don't need decarbonisation. We need recarbonisation. And we need some depoliticisation. I mean, the amount of hot air and the amount of wind that Matt Keane passes wouldn't light up a light bulb. And then we have, you know, as our Prime Minister, Al Bozo, as I like to call him, and then we have that other monumental moron, Chris Bozoan, who goes off about how nuclear is the most expensive. But as you've just explained and described so eloquently, I mean, renewables are just the most expensive form. If you have to spend $70 billion rewiring a perfectly good grid that would take energy from those small modular nuclear reactors, you know, I mean, you just have to be nuts. I can't. And the thing that annoys me about the Liberal Party and about Barnaby, I mean, I'm a Liberal voter, but they were in power for 9 years. Why didn't they build nuclear power stations? Why didn't they buy up, if they have to? I mean, I don't like the government's buying things up, but why didn't they buy some of these coal-fired power stations, redo them, and, you know, just silence these leftist
to be fair to the previous government, small modular reactors are really not ready for purpose right now. They're saying that we're talking 4 to 5 to 6 years, but they will be ready to go in that period. And Rolls-Royce is confirmed to be part of a whole heap of projects that will deliver them in that time period. Right now, there are projects in practice, in trial, and you can see them, as Christina Tulaco, who we spoke to on the program, has witnessed, but they are purely modules and pilots and trials. But we'll get our first small modular reactor in 4 years' time. It will work, and the rest of the world will go, oh, is it that easy?
I'll take a regular nuclear reactor. I mean, it'll be finished before the first bit of cabling is ever rewired by, as I said, Chris Bozoan. I mean, we live in crazy times, and thank God people like you are on the air to knock some sense into our politicians. But you should go enter into politics, you know. You'd do a lot of
I wouldn't dare. I wouldn't dare. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate your call. See ya. And he's right. He's right. You know, the so-called transition that European countries, America, UK and Australia hopes will take them to a renewable, cheap future is non-existent. And sure, have your renewables contributing to the power grid? Have your renewables contributing to the power grid? But don't tell me that they will supply your baseload power. I haven't seen the document. I have not witnessed the document. Have you? I love this story. I want to leave you with this. A digital camera that had seemed forever lost has been found after 13 years. 13. Coral Amai lost her camera in 2010 while tubing on the Animas River in Colorado following her best friend's wedding. Amai said to Fox 31 Denver, "I'd gotten tossed from my tube at Smelter Rapid, and I came back up, got my tube, and my camera was missing." Many of the photos on Amai's camera had not been uploaded to her computer, leaving her heartbroken. "I remember getting back to my boyfriend's house," she said, "and uncontrollably crying and was very upset." Amai reportedly thought she would never see her camera again. Well, all that changed when a fisherman found something in shallow water. Spencer Greiner told Fox 31, "I was walking along and saw it sticking out of the sand." He's a fisherman, Spencer. He said, "It was in rough shape, so I really didn't have any hopes of getting anything off it. I was planning to throw it away. And then curiosity got the best of me, and I had to see what was on it." Greiner was able to use a screwdriver and open the door to access the camera's memory card. Remember when we had memory card? Oh, you might have memory cards in cameras still. I tend to use my mobile phone. While scrolling through the photos, he found images of, you guessed it, the tubing trip, a bachelorette party, and a wedding. The whole kit and caboodle was on the card. Determined to track down the camera's owner, Greiner posted some of the images on a local Facebook group. He asked this question: did you get married on June the 12th, 2010 in the Dorago area? Did you have an ugly brown stretch station wagon at your bachelorette party? He's got a sense of humour. Do you recognise any of these people? If so, please contact me. Within 1 hour, 1 hour, Griner had people coming forward after recognising themselves in several of the images. Well done. Bingo. It was less than an hour after, he said, I made the post and the groom from the wedding was like, that's me and my wife. Griner says, I was so shocked that it happened so quickly. The bride and groom, who recognised the photos, then reached out to Amehi with the good news her camera had been found. She said, I got up and was like dancing in the bathroom, and I was like, who am I going to tell? I need to tell this to somebody, like right now. From where the camera was lost to where it was found downstream, Griner believes it travelled 1.2 miles down the Colorado River. But after 13 years in the river, Amehi's camera had withstood the elements of nature, and she says, it just blows my mind. Fantastic story of lost and found. I've got to run away. Damien Richardson is in next. Do not go anywhere. I'll be back to do this again tomorrow. Hopefully you can tune in and listen on TNT Radio.